Fakti un viedokļi. Krustpunktā.
Studijā Aidis Tomsons. Protams, ka šodien mēs daudz runājam un runāsim par Ukrainu. Nu, tieši pirms 3 gadiem Latvijas Radio 1 arī pilnībā mainīja visu programmu. Mēs te visas dienas garumā stāstījām tikai par notikušo jeb sākušos karu, par to, ka Krievija ir uzsākusi pilnu mērogu iebrukumu Ukrainā. Mēs todien nezinājām, cik ilgi Ukraina spēs noturēties, vai tā vispār spēs stāvēt pretī Krievijai. Mēs apspriedām šeit dažādas scenārijas, bija ļoti daudz spekulāciju. Nu, vērojot to, kas šobrīd notiek līdz ar Trumpa atgriešanos pasaules politikā, mēs apzināmies, ka mēs atkal esam nonākuši krustcelēs. Atkal ir daudz nezināmā, atkal mūsu izvēles arī noteiks cilvēku likteņus. Kā šis viss izskatās no Ukrainas skatu punkta? Kā tad viņi jūtas, ko domā, kā redz savu to tālāko nākotni? Nu, protams, neviens nevar runāt visu vārdā, bet nu, šodien studiju intervijai mēs esam aicinājuši Ukrainas vēstnieku Latvijā Anatoliju Kucevolu. Mūsu saruna nebūs šeit visu stundu, vēstniekam, diemžēl, jādodas raidījuma pēdējās 15 minūtes ir prom, bet nu, cik nu, laiks ļauj, mēs izmantosim šo iespēju. Pēc tam šeit studijā arī būs mani kolēģi, mēs turpināsim raidījumu par Ukrainu un pasaules politiku. Bet nu, šobrīd tas arī nozīmē, ka mēs tātad tuvākajās minūtēs sarunu notiks ar tulka palīdzību, un es saku paldies Aigai Vackalnei, kas tad palīdzēs mūsu teikumus angļu valodā darīt saprotamus ikvienam. Es nu tad tātad tagad pārēju uz angļu valodu. I'm delighted to welcome you in our program, Mr. Ambassador.
Labdien.
Labdien, jā, vai ne? If we can please start with feelings, knowing what has happened, what has been said in public space also in the last couple of weeks, what is your mood?
Well, labdien to everyone, labdien to Latvian listeners. I'm really proud to be here on 21st of February, speaking to Latvian nation by radio, and it's very important and symbolic building, even for myself to understand how it was symbolic for barricades and other national movements, which were really similar to what we had in Ukraine in different period of time. And when it comes to feeling, I'm always trying to understand my personal feelings on how do I perceive history, how do I understand the future, which I actually foresee as for myself or for my family. And then on actually having in mind that, I can think about general feelings for the country. So, first of all, 3 years of war, feelings are quite different. I woke up and understood that it's an ordinary day and it will continue until we are fighting, until all people got justice. But then you realize that it's not only about 3 years, then it's about 11 years of Russian invasion and annexation of Crimea. As a people who lived on the eastern part of Ukraine for quite a long period of time, and you can imagine that 11 years is a huge number. Imagine that there were kids who were 6-7 years old living in that period of time, and they had to flee their hometown because Russian Nazis came and took over the territory, despite of calling them in different ways that they are independent republics or whatever. Or living in Crimea, and then after 11 years you have an adult. So living the whole life out of the territory, and it's a nightmare for some generations who actually were forced to leave the territory 11 years ago. But then you start to think about the situation. Was it something new? No. Unfortunately, it's not new. It has been there 100 years ago. It has been there 300 years ago. And it was quite similar but not visible at the beginning of 90s when we were fighting for Crimean Blackfeet and we were staying there just in order to control Ukrainian army instead of calling it Soviet army. And then the Budapest Memorandum came out and you then started to understand that was actually the way how a lot of people around even were feeling in 1996. So my personal feelings after several weeks which we are actually witnessing, it's a global challenge for democratic countries because of values which we are staying for. and that would be surprising for a lot of people. But the most important is to question yourself: who is actually getting profits from all this? And the clear answer of it is, first of all, is our enemy, which is applauding to whatever is going on, because we are not sure about where we are united, and we need just to get a clear answer to it. We are united. We are able to fight for Europe. We are able to fight for our democratic values, and still, Ukraine didn't start the war. Ukraine was a country who has been attacked.
Okay, you ask the questions, and we sometimes don't know ourselves. We don't know the answers. And if we speak about Latvia, I think there is quite much anxiety, even depression among Latvians about the situation in Latvia at the moment. Is there any reason for this, you think?
Well, every time when you're living through a challenging period of time, you need to ask yourself, whereas you are in a really difficult situation. There's several funny stories when people are coming to psychologists or priests and they're saying that they are living in a different period of time, and the priest or psychologist would advise them to buy a new pet, or I would say a cow to hold at home. And then the person stays with this pet and the cow for several weeks, and then comes to the priest and is saying that, sorry, my life is nightmare. And priest says, just sell the cow, and then everything would be fine. So you have to just understand who is living in a worse situation. So depression is not something which is moving you towards the decision-making process. It's something which you need to overcome, and the majority of Ukrainians are living through this difficult period of time. But then when you put on wages your life, you start to understand that there's no way.
That's okay, yeah. But especially when we speak about... I remember also this feeling when we were sitting here in the studio 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. In that day, the people of Ukraine also had to decide whether they to confront the invaders, or they surrender, maybe capitulate, yes. Are we today again at a crossroads?
I wouldn't say that people on 24th were thinking about capitulation. It was a point. I woke up 5 a.m. from calls from my people working for me. And the first thing which you do is you preparing your family for any kind of situation, movements, evacuation, whatever. So you're preparing a backpack with all your documents, your belongings, and first needs in case you would need to move. Then you start thinking, what should I do? And you need just to come back to ordinary things and to be part of the society. And then probably a few hours, people were hesitating, but then at some moment, people understood that there are no choices, and that just to stay and to fight back. And that what was happening. Probably, okay, everyone was thinking about 3 days of possible time frame to get the territory of Ukraine. If Ukraine, we got brave Ukrainian soldiers, including Latvian weapons, who protected Kyiv city, who fought for quite a long period of time, and it lasted until for 30 days of this first challenge. But then the society was back to reality that none except us should be here and fighting for our freedom. It wasn't possible without other societies. No, you need support on a daily basis. When you understand that you are supported by ordinary people in different countries, when the different countries are supporting you, that what is happening. If you would compare that there was a political instability in different countries and the decision whereas to support or not to support, yes, it was. Definitely, at the very beginning. And then you by convincing them, by showing your readiness and answers not from politicians, primarily answers from ordinary people who are living on territory of Ukraine. Those who convinced a lot of world leaders to come to Ukraine and to see in their own eyes, And then to continue supporting. So if you are living in through a new depressing period of time, we just as a global community, we need just to live through it. That's what mm-hmm. what we should think about it. And there is a famous church's quote: "If you are going through hell, just keep going."
What do you think about all these talks about peace talks, which will be very very soon?
So I would say that they are going for quite long period of time in different formats because since the day one we wanted to have also peace, but it mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you have to concede your country to anyone who is saying that I will give you peace once you will concede it. The ongoing process is an exchange of different views on different teams between Ukraine, U.S., who is playing a key role here, U.S. with Russians, but also there are a lot of other leaders who are joining the process and also talking to both the U.S. and even Russians. I would say that Saudi Arabia is also talking to Russians and some other partners who are doing it as well. So the peace is not something which you can achieve in a one-hour term. So there should be conditions. President Zelensky yesterday mentioned that it couldn't be done in a day, it couldn't be done in an hour, because such things, when you do, you're just conceding. And there is no justice for people. And if you just want to stop the war, it's one case. But if you want to ensure people that they won't be attacked again, that's sort of another story.
Okay, but you know, the White House press secretary said on Saturday that they are confident that ceasefire will be agreed this week. How to understand this?
Well, White House is a good partner right now to push on Russians and to reach an agreement. And as we from very beginning mentioned that for us there is a quite high possibility and a goodwill from President Trump to stop the war. The only point is here that we need to enlarge the number of participants of these discussions, and we would like to be a member of this table because without Ukraine it's not possible, first of all. Mm-hmm. And at least there are no discussions between Ukraine, Russia and U.S. As a joint combination when somebody is talking about ceasefire. So the ceasefire should be on both sides. And Europe is crucial to be around this table. So partners who supported you for a very long period of time, and we are seeking the future EU membership, and as well as we consider ourselves a EU country, one of the biggest in Europe, and our people are living in Europe. So without Europe, is not possible. So we need to be sure all of us. It should not be done only between two countries.
Okay, but anyway, you know, the Russia and US are negotiating now, and does America does not have some leverage to force you to make concessions, to accept their terms?
Well, a really tricky word, negotiating. I do believe that they have in talks. They still cannot negotiate without participation mm-hmm. of Ukraine. And in our humble opinion, also of Europe. There will be always some room for discussion on what. We, for example, are ready to exchange Kursk region, as President said. Mm-hmm. We are also having Kursk region, and we are ready to exchange it for our territories and other elements. So let's see, whereas those will be negotiations than on the talks.
But what about the possibility to force you?
I don't think that it's only decision about from political level. It's a decision from 800,000 Ukrainian army and also civilian people who are living on territory of Ukraine. It's 20 million. It's not that easy and possible to force us to do something.
We hear in Latvia that Ukrainian army is also very tired and maybe want to stop the war.
I don't think that it's an issue of stopping the war, as I know. No warriors right now saying that they want to stop it. They would like to have a peace based on something. They are tired, yes. Are they ready to stop the war? No. They just want to have clear answers. If you would come to them and you will give a command saying that we just stop, if there is a ceasefire, they will ask you what then. So they will put a list of questions. Where is the justice? Who will be responsible for killing our brothers in arms? Who will be responsible for killing my family? There's so many Ukrainian soldiers who lost their families, civilian families, not because of fighting, but because they were just somewhere on territory of Ukraine. And they some of men decided to join Ukrainian army because Russian army just killed their family, whole family. And then there might be a lot of questions from those. And you cannot just force. There is a clear message to everyone that it's not possible to force. You have to negotiate. If those are negotiations, then should be everyone around the table.
About these negotiations, what are the preconditions for Ukraine to agree to come to these negotiations?
Well, that's really easy. There were two events on peace formula. I mean, major events where global leaders were. The several key points which were put in this peace formula, including the most important one is justice. So people are seeking for justice, and they would like to see justice after the end of the war.
But do you understand the word justice?
Justice is ability to go to the court and claim your rights and to claim somebody guilty for something what has been done. This is the issue of not only political leadership in Russia. This is the issue of Russian soldiers who came on territory of Ukraine, mm-hmm. who broke all the rules of war, and they should be responsible for everything what they did. Because at some moment, political leaders might say, I sent him, but I didn't instruct him to do whatever he did there. With civilians, with women, with kids. So raping is not something which is instructed by the army. Raping is something what that person, specific one, took a decision to do in that specific moment. Or killing people because they were just speaking language. Because they were civilians, but not soldiers. Or destroying the civilian infrastructure, energy heating system. So like a week ago, leaving a city of Mykolaiv without energy, 100,000 people living without energy and heating for some period of time. That's actually a kind of issues which people would like to bring to justice. They would like to go to the court and to identify who is responsible for that. Frozen assets, guilt, also prisoners of war. All our prisoners who are currently in Russia are not released.
Do you think it's really possible to bring or to get this justice in this?
I do believe that we as a global community, having in mind that we create our societies based on some principles, we don't have any right to break this type of principles and to come to the negotiations and leaving the bully victorious. This is the key problem for everyone. It's not just the issue to stop the war. It's the issue how you would explain it to actually further the people and nations which will be around the table one day.
And if it doesn't happen, then it means the war will continue.
I do believe that, first of all, there should be negotiations, and then there should be stronger position of all Western allies. Ukraine, Europe, US, together with us, around the table. And we should be speaking one voice and trying to reach a peaceful agreement. And then we would leave also some elements for a diplomatic solution for other years, decades, centuries, whatever. But in my understanding is that some elements which people are required from all of us to respond on those.
As we talk about this in Latvia, we are afraid that the US will try to force you. I use this way. If you have to lose, for example, the support of US, in order to continue this war, is it possible for Ukraine to continue to fight against invaders without US help?
You can Czech, how we fought for 8 months without your support when the Congress didn't pass the decision, and it was quite a long period of time. So we were fighting with the support of our own industry and our allies in Europe and worldwide, except US. Mm-hmm. So it's not something new when you are fighting without US support, direct US support. And it doesn't mean that we are in a situation that we need a ceasefire and we are not continuing fighting. No, yes, we are continuing fighting. And we truly believe that it's not possible for US to quit the process at all. I mean, they might think about it if they want, but in general, if you look into a bigger picture, it's not in the interest of U.S. and their citizens and as well as global community to do such movement, because on the wages is totally different story. On the wages is the further actions of Russia, what it might do after such kind of ceasefire would be reached, or we could be forced to do something. Then who is next? And here comes the problem. So the border and probably the concern of Latvian citizens is that you have border with Russia, as do we. And we also were afraid of something since 2014. A lot of people moved. They were afraid. But then in 2022, other people also understood the consequences of war. And after 3 years of this recent aggression, majority of us understood that if you stand up against bullies, then it's possible. But if somebody is asking you to concede something or force you, it's no go. It's not working right now. It's not possible. And if a politician or a group of people would come up to you and say that you need to take such difficult decision because it is better for you, you can actually give thousands of examples of wives, kids, families who are in this situation and they believe you that they need to fight. Unfortunately, there are so many of those kids who were in 2014 as kids, probably not 7 years old, but 10 years old, and or even smaller. In 2022, they joined Ukraine army because in 2014, they thought what was there in Crimea in eastern Ukraine, and they had no other choice than to fight because it's their land, the history of their families, and you have no reason to concede.
Well, today, there are many European leaders in Kyiv today, and as I understand, they also are talking about possibility to increase, for example, support. It could be very helpful.
I do believe that we have no choice than to be stronger, all of us. We need Europe to be stronger, much stronger than it was. We need to have Ukraine stronger, because if we live near to the border, we need to get along with that, and we need to be prepared to any situation which might come out of any kind of provocation. And we should not be relying only on something whose decision might come up because of political will or not. So it's our territory, it's Europe, Poland, Ukraine's Baltic countries, but Germany as well, and everyone. That is why today we have Nordic Baltic countries, including President Yanukovych in Kyiv. We have Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, but we also have Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez as well. I mean, so it's unbelievable, and as well as the European Commission, with all the commissioners who came to Ukraine, it's quite large support, and no way that we should decide in another way. Should we take harder decisions after what is happening at least for the last 2 weeks? Yes, definitely. So we need to think about our own armies. We need to think about defense industry production. We need to increase figures in GDP relevance in order to provide necessary support. Army, why do we need it? Not because we are willing to have war. The problem is that a neighbor who is next to us is not willing to decrease the number of GDP spent for military industry. And the problem, if you won't be doing it right now, all of us, Ukraine, all European countries, then you might be a target in some period of time. Not because Ukraine need to concede some territories and everything will be fine. It's not the final goal. So you have to understand the larger picture. The goal is overall European territory. That's the problem.
Yes, about... if we a little bit more continue this question about NATO, as it's clear, it seems clear that Ukraine has no chance of joining NATO today, at the moment. If only because of Trump's position, for example. Mr. Zelensky said, if not, then we have to think about new NATO in Ukraine. What do you understand by this?
Well, as for now, there is no other NATO than the existing one.
That's right.
So, first of all, the different political talks on whether it's having Ukraine as a part of NATO or not. In our humble opinion, there is no other way than having us in NATO. Mm-hmm. Because in any circumstances, we are already in a military alliance between all of us. You are providing us weapons, you are providing us support, we are fighting on our territory, we started the production, joint production in some areas. We are ready to deploy our army in case of need, and as I mentioned, 800,000 Ukrainian soldiers when it would be necessary. But so we already there. There are only some missing points of having legalistic decision, whereas all of us, we will be fighting in case somebody would decide to break our territory or start attacking us. That's the case for future, how to prevent. So the only discussion for us about NATO is not pushing our European partners and international partners towards a war right now. It's if in case we join and we agree on peace, one of the conditions which might prevent for further actually actions over the Europe is NATO membership. And if we are part of the NATO, we could actually, together with all European countries, control the eastern flank of Europe and all the borders. I don't think that there are plans of changing NATO into some other formats. There might be smaller units between smaller countries on their sovereign decision to take some actions in case they would like to do so, including the peace corps which might come to the territory of Ukraine. It's this overall discussion who can deploy in what number. So this is also part of it. But there is no plan B, unfortunately, to this. Or you would consider Ukraine as a partner in arms at the peace moment, that you are ready that Ukraine would be protecting you as well, and because you did it for us this time, that's reality for the bully to understand that no go. So you know that with Ukrainians it's hard. If Ukrainians have weapons, they will be fighting us on any place, any territory, and whatever. There are so much motivated people in the Ukrainian army who would be fighting Russians until the end. So this is it, and because there is ideology in it, they fought, they came on our territory, they killed their families. You actually can check how many Ukrainian soldiers are from eastern part of Ukraine. So majority, I would say, it's not true that it's coming from the western part of Ukraine or central part of Ukraine. Majority of men are also from eastern part of Ukraine, and this is the reality. My president says that if a political decision is needed for that, he is even ready to take his political decision in case it would lead us to reach peace, justice, and membership in NATO. But he truly believes, and we, all of us, we truly believe that membership in NATO is something would save Europe from any kind of conflicts in future.
So I hear that you say that if there is no joining to NATO, for example, if somebody is blocking this, then there is no peace agreement.
No, there might be other type of guarantees. So we are ready to exchange that for NATO. Some type of other guarantees are more than welcome. Until 1996, we got nuclear weapons. So that was a totally preventive to Russia. If you check Mr. Putin's rhetorics, when we still were having nuclear weapons and even strategic aviation after we actually gave up nuclear weapons, he was publicly saying, we are not planning to come to territory of Ukraine. It's a nightmare. No one is ready to do that. So that would be an end for everything. He said it.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and check it. But then what happened? We demolished the overall defense capabilities in order, because the majority of partners asked us to demolish this, the hugest military potential in Europe and one of the hugest in the world. Because of what? We've been asked to do so. So if we ask once again to do something, and last 11 years of war, what they are showing to the society. Ukrainian society is not actually believing in anyone saying that we will guarantee you. We got the guarantees from 1996. And what is on the table then?
I am looking what questions we can answer here. In recent days, there's much has been said about the agreement whereby Ukraine is transferring access to the part of land resources in exchange for security guarantees. The first question is, why is such a thing even being proposed?
Well, it's not something new. The issue of subsoil extraction and overall economic cooperation between Ukraine and partners, not only US, has been on the table for quite a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It has been offered to Europe, it has been offered to US several times. We have quite a big number of subsoil resources, and those are from the list of critical raw materials which has the EU. So, and they're really important to further development. What we offered was that we are offering to partners partnership. So let's do it together. Let's invest in this land plots. Let's extract. Let's do joint ventures. Let's do production, and it will be beneficial for Europe. And we signed several times joint MOUs between European Commission and the government of Ukraine on subsoil extraction. That was really important for Europe at all. And also on the agenda there were US. So we were offering US to use also this as a possibility. But that was an economic offer. Let's jointly extract. Your companies will get profits because it's extraction. It's always about profits.
Mm-hmm.
And joint productions on territory of Ukraine, whatever. But exchange of our sovereign land and raw materials for security guarantees, I don't think that we are putting this discussion appropriately. This was from Ukrainian side offered as economic cooperation. But was not just an offer, protect us, and then we will give you raw materials. So this is something actually evolved to, I would say, quite difficult situation from perception.
So Mr. Trump didn't understand.
I do believe that he had his own thoughts on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is a sovereign country who is showing the will to have economic cooperation. It's normal that a country is offering to another country a cooperation at state-to-state level, and then companies are identified to cooperate B2B. I mean, it's normal, because then the state is providing you licenses for extractions, and the state is also responsible to put taxes on it, and so you also have to control. Environmental controls, this is also important. But the problem was that I guess the draft agreement has been combined with other elements which were unexpected, including the, announced amounts of resources which Ukraine could have received.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a clear answer from Ukrainian side on how did we receive, how much did we receive from Europe, from American partners, which we are really grateful for. And it was quite normal to everyone to understand that in a time of need, there was a direct budget support from U.S. government. There were technical assistance support, which primarily has been used by American companies, not by Ukrainian institutions, as a key source, and military support, which has been provided directly from U.S. in different manners. One is that they something bought on the global market and something produced on local market. A majority was that they invested resources in their production on territory of U.S. Totally understood for us, because our focus was to get weapons and to continue fighting, as well as to cover budget deficit, because the revenues of companies who were situated on territory of Ukraine, which is currently under control of Russians, they were just vanished. So, for example, Azovstal, it's in city of Mariupol, one of the biggest taxpayers on territory of Ukraine. So you can imagine that they are controlling Azovstal, they totally destroyed it, and you don't have, first of all, taxes, and you don't have people who were working there, and so you have labor problems as well. So that was clear for us that we were receiving support for granted, and we were always cooperating. Because of that, we also were offering economic cooperation, which might lead to get profits for American companies. But I don't think it was a perspective of getting a total control over something, and also to give back some amount of resources which were spent on territory of Ukraine. By whom? That's a question.
Okay. I won't ask you about this pushing you to hold elections, because it is...
No, it's easy. I mean, totally easy for us. President says that he is ready to call for elections, presidential elections, once there is an end of the war, as well as parliament is ready to do the same. I don't think there is a problem. Ukrainian constitution forbids the possibility to have elections at the war. Plenty of different examples of having elections during the wartime, including U.S. saying that they did have elections in the wartime. But in fact, no one actually was fighting on their territory or occupying any part of territory during elections. But in Ukrainian reality, it would require quite a big number of efforts. First of all, it's how to ensure safety on territory of Ukraine, then how to ensure that there is a political campaigning. So if you are talking about a war time. And the third one is how to ensure that people who are outside of Ukraine would also participate in elections, including those up to 8 million living in Europe and Western countries. So I would say a quite big number of those have the voting rights, and we need to ensure it. And it's a big challenge. You can do it with 100,000 people, probably living abroad, but when it comes to millions, it's unprecedented, a new experience.
Of course. I want to finish this conversation with a question about when you took the office, you said that the goal, Ukraine's goal, is to win the war. What do we understand? How do we understand these words today? What is the win?
Good question. Probably the meaning of victory is different for everyone. Starting for Russians who might today announce that they won something, reach a victory. But for Ukrainians, it would be different. Different totally, probably first of all, it's keeping sovereignty of the country, the most important one. Then to control territory of Ukraine, which we are controlling right now. Third one is to still be able to perform our international duties and to be partner of Europe, and as well as partner around the UN table, which also will convene today. And victory for us would be that all these atrocities of war, like biggest number of fallen civilians, more than 46,000 of Ukrainian soldiers, all those would be seeking for justice. And we would ensure that there is a platform to seek for this justice. And still availability of diplomatic platforms to discuss further uncontrolled territories, of Ukraine, which might come back to Ukraine on one day. And I do believe for us, it's a combination of different elements. All of us, we would like to have it as much as possible. But the reality is cruel, and we need also to fix at some moment. But the most important, what we give as a perspective, as a future. So we don't cease because somebody is willing us to cease. We would like to stop, to move everything to diplomatic discussion, and then without human losses, we would be spending a lot of time to get our territories back, and as well as we would be working a lot to get Ukrainians who fled the country back and to restore the nation, including the seized Russian frozen assets.
Thank you for coming to our program.
Thank you. Thank you, Aldis.
Ukrainas vēstnieks Latvijā Anatolijs Kucevals. Kucevala kungs dodas prom, mēs tūlīt turpināsim arī studijā savukārt pievienojoties tagad maniem kolēģiem.
Latvijas sabiedriskais medijs. Domās un darbos kopā ar Ukrainu. Raidījums Krustpunktā.
Šobrīd Krustpunktā studijā ienākuši divi Latvijas radio žurnālisti. Radījuma vadītājs Eduards Liniņš. Prieks tevi redzēt šeit, Eduard.
Labdien.
Un Rihards Plūvi no Latvijas radio ziņdienest. Paldies tev, Rihards.
Labdien.
Es arī šeit klāt. Es iesāku no to sarunu jautājot vēstnieku kungam, kādām sajūtām viņš sagaida šo trešo pilnu mēro kara gada dienu. Jūsu sajūtas tavas, Rihards?
Es teiktu, ka varbūt ne tik ļoti satraucoši, kā tas bija 2022. gada 24. februārī, kad sākās pilnmēroga iebrukums, bet šobrīd ir tas vēl viens ļoti satraucošais posms, laikam, kad ir ļoti daudz dažādu neskaidrību. Tā kā par to, laikam, varbūt ir lielākais satraukums šobrīd.
Eduard.
Jā, man ir jāpiekrīt kolēģim, ka jāsaka arī manas emocijas ir lielā mērā tāda neziņa. Es domāju, šādā izjūtā ir šobrīd liela daļa pasaules. Un tas, kas notiek globāli un kas ir ļoti cieši saistīts ar Ukrainu. Ukraina faktiski šobrīd ir zināmā mērā tāds indikators kļuvis, kas varbūt nebija tik skaidrs brīdī, kad prezidents Trumps ieņēma savu amatu. Bet nu, šobrīd tas ir kļuvis zināmā mērā provis akmenis tam, cik godīga, saprātīga, integrēta ir šī administrācija un cik vispār lielā mērā Amerika ir tā, par kuru mēs to esam raduši uzskatīt. Tas ir tas būtiskais jautājums, kas mani tirda šai brīdī un uz kuru mēs, es domāju, visi mēģināsim tuvākajā perspektīvā rast tādu vai citādu atbildi.
Nu, mana saruna ar vēstnieku bija itin salīdzinoša. Es teikšu tādu pozitīvas notas. Vismaz man tāda sajūta ir, nu, ka viņi ir apņēmības pilni, sakot, nē, nu, ka viņus piespiest nevar, ka viņi jo vajadzēs viņi, nu, es saklausīju, mēs karosim tad bez
un tā,
Amerikas.
Tas arī ir, jā, tāds ir Ukrainas noskaņojums, tādu es to arī esmu dzirdējis no mūsu kolēģiem, Ukraiņu žurnālistiem, politologiem. Cits starpā piedaloties arī Ukrinform rīkotā tiešsaistes tādā apaļajā galdā pirms dažām dienām. Tā ir apņēmība, tā ir gatavība cīnīties, tā ir realistiska savu iespēju novērtēšana. Jo visas tās vaimanas par to, cik Ukraina ir šobrīd jau sagrauta un faktiski, ka tā ir pēdējais brīdis kaut ko darīt, respektīvi sarunāties un padoties faktiski, jo citādi būs viss cauri. Nē, Ukrainā absolūti nav šāds noskaņojums. Ukraiņi zina, ko dara, taiskaitā militāri. Ja paskatās uz dažiem rādītājiem, es gribētu uzsvērt vien ļoti būtisku rādītāju, Krievijas armijas zaudējumi Ukrainā šobrīd ir rekordlieli. Tie ir teju 5 reizes lielāki nekā tie bija vidēji 2022. gadā.
Kā tu novērtē šo te Ukraiņu apņēmību? Nu, ar vai bez Amerikas? Ko varam to darām?
Nē, es viennozīmīgi varu piekrist, ka apņēmība ir. Apņēmība būs arī tad, pat ja brīnumainā kārtā, ja Eiropa
izstātos, ja?
Neizstātos, bet turpinātu ilgi vilcināties un nekādīgi īsti nepalīdzētu, par ko es stipri šaubos. Es redzam, ka tomēr tā apņēmība ir darīt vairāk. Pašiem ukraiņiem, es domāju, jā, viņi cīnītos arī vien paši, ja tas būtu nepieciešams, jā.
Es vakar skatījos preses konferences, nu, garu preses konferences, vairāk nekā 2 stundas, man liekas, bija kopumā Zelenski kungam sarunājoties ar visu pasaules žurnālistiem, tur bija sabraukuši un tam līdzīgi. Un tā viņa nostāja tāda, nu, censties pēc iespējas, nē, nu, kamēr varam, tikmēr strādājam. Un neļauties kaut kādam tādām aizvainojumam, apvainojumiem, nu, kas tā kā skan no Trumpa puses, viņš tā mazliet ar ironiju pasmaidot, bet atbild tajā visā.
Es gribētu teikt, ka faktiski šobrīd Ukraina parāda diplomātiski tādu pašu fenomenālu izturību un apņēmību, kādu tā militāri demonstrēja. Nu, ir demonstrējis visu šo laiku, bet nu, tā pašā kara sākumā, kad bija runa tiešām par 3 dienām, un lielākā daļa pasaules uzskatīja, ka 3 dienas vai, nu, vai varbūt 3 nedēļas, un Kijeva būs kritusi, tad šobrīd Ukraina iztur apmēram līdzīgu spiedienu un triecienus diplomātiskajā frontē. Jo tas, ko dara Donalds Trumps, ir, nu, es teiktu, nu, es nelietošu nekādu apzīmējumu, lai man nepārmestu nepieņemamu rupjību. Tā kā Ukraina iztur. Un tas mierīgums un tāds vajadzīgais atturīgums un joprojām diplomātisks elastīgums, ko tā ir saglabājusi, es teiktu, ka ir visai pārsteidzoši.
Kā tu to novērtē, man interesē?
Jā, ukraiņi noteikti nesteidz mesties līdz visam, ko amerikāņi viņiem met pretī, kaut vai par tiem pašiem derīgajiem izrakteņiem. Tur vēl šodien dažas stundas iepriekš lasīja, ka esot pēdējā posmā šī te vienošanās par derīgajiem izrakteņiem, tā kā es saprotu, ka tuvu, nu, varbūt ne parakstīšanai, bet nu, tādam galīgai sapratnē, kam tad tur ir jābūt iekšā. Zelenskis gan ir teicis, ka neparakstīs šo vienošanos, ja tajā netiks iekļautas drošības garantijas. Nu, tad ir jautājums, vai amerikāņi jau ir kaut kāda veida, nezinu, kāda veida drošības garantijas jau piedāvājuši reiz. Ir reiz no Kijevas amatpersonām skan tāda izteikuma, ka ir ļoti tūk tam galīgajam papīram par šo vienošanos. Un jā, par to pašu viņš arī visai diplomātiski, arī noturīgi un stingri ir teicis, ka viņš netaisās parakstīt kaut ko tikai lai būtu miers. Un tas ir tikai viena no piemēriem.
Piemēram, jā. Un tieši tāpēc es tādu interesanti, nu, redzi, mēs nevaram pateikt, kur tas viss aizvedīs, bet kā tev šķiet, nu, ar tavu pieredzi, cik tu esi strādā šobrīd ar kaut kādā šajā starptautisko ziņu laukā, nu, nāksies Trumpam piekāpties, viņš smāk piekāpties, viņš beigās kaut kur atkāpsies no savas tādas, nu, tādas braukšanas virsū.
Nu, man ņemot vērā to, ka viņš ļoti vēlas, lai pamieris stājas spēkā, viņš vēlas būt tas, kas to panāk, tad nu, viņam nāksies, nu, viņš nevar uzspiest abām pusēm to, ko viņš tikai vēlas, lai pēc iespējas ātrāk tas beigtos. Viņam ir jāieklausās abās pusēs. Pagaidām izklausās, ka viņš vairāk tieši par viņu runājot ieklausās Krievijā. Pārējie varbūt sarunvedēji tomēr vairāk ieklausās arī tajā, ko saka Ukraina, īpaši Kīts Kelloggs, Ukrainas sūtnis, kas arī bija Kijevā nesen. Bet nu jā, tur ir jābūt soli pa solim, kā Zelenskis arī šodien pavisam nesen teica, tad nu, tas miers var sākties ar nelieliem soļiem, kas, kā parasti to visi saka, veido savstarpējo uzticību abu pušu starpā. Un kā piemēram viņš ir minējis, ka no Krievijas puses šāds solis, kas varētu nozīmēt par to, ka viņi tiešām vēlas mieru, varētu būt visu gūstekņu apmaiņu. To viņš paziņoja pirms apmēram stundas divām. Tas varētu būt viņa prāt, kā nu, kaut vai viens no soļiem, kas varētu tikt spērts, lai mēs kaut kur varētu virzīties uz priekšu. Bet nu, no Krievijas šobrīd gan neizskan nekas, kas, kur kāda piekāpšanās varētu būt. Izskanēja no amerikāņu puses, ka varētu būt šis te pamieras pamatā uz, kā ir bijuši šī Stambulas vienošanās 2022. Gadā, Nu, tur bija viss uz Krievijas nosacījumiem. Atteikšanās no Krimas, atteikšanās no NATO, neutralitāte, Ukrainas armijas samazināšana ievērojamos apjomos. To pašu joprojām vēlas Krievija un nu, vismaz pagaidām nav publiski nekādu pazīmi par kur tad kaut kāda piekāpšanās varētu būt. Lai gan šodien ir ziņas, ka esot panākt vienošanās starp Krieviju un Ukrainu par to, kā Sarkanais krusts evakuē civiliedzīvotājs no Kurskas. Bet vai tas ir saistībā kaut kā ar miera sarunām grūti?
Būs miera sarunas vispār, tavuprāt?
Es teiktu, ka drīzāk būs. Jo faktiski nu, kaut kādā saruna procesā ir ieinteresētas visas puses. Es domāju, ka Krievija arī ir ieinteresēta noslēgt šo aktīvo kara fāzi ātrāk nekā tā mums izrāda. Bet es nebūtu, faktiski es neredzu, kā šīs sarunas varētu novest pie ātra rezultāta. Nu, lielākais, kas manuprāt varētu būt kāda uguns pārtraukšana uz zināmu termiņu, kas pat nav pamieris. Tā ir tikai uguns pārtraukšana, kas var beigties kurā katrā brīdī, kad viena no pusēm to pārkāpīja un tur var būt arī kaut kādas nejaušības. Nu, tādas mēs esam redzējuši pēdējā laikā, teiksim, Gazas un Izraēlas karā. Šīs uguns pārtraukšanas. Vai un kad varētu notikt kāda nopietna vienošanās par pamieru. Nu, par mieru sarunām es baidos, ka tas vispār nav iespējams no jebkāda Krievijas attieksmes pret starptautiskajām tiesībām viedokļa un tas, kā šobrīd Savienoto valstu administrācija attiecas pret starptautisko tiesību principiem, tas, manuprāt, šo iespēju netuvina drīzāk otrādi.
Mēs 4. Gadu šitā dzimšanas dienās bedīgajās, tā to sacīt, atzīmēm kara sākšanos būs 5. Tas pats jārunā. Tavuprāt, mēs ir cerības šī gada laikā tomēr kaut kam apturēties.
Nu, es domāju, labākajā gadījumā pamieris kaut kad gadu otrā pusē, es tā vismaz domāju, jā. Katrā gadījumā. Skaidrs ir viens, ka Ukrainā nākamgad nekas nebūs beidzies. Es nezinu, vai būs panākts tiešām jau uz nākamo gadu tāds miers, kad mēs varam, nu, neteikt šeit uzelpot, bet nu, saprast, ka nu, Krievija tiešām ir kaut kur lielā mērā piekāpusies un mēs neesam kļuvuši, nedzīvojam vēl nedrošākā vidē.
Es saku jums paldies, tāpēc, ka laika vairs nav, bet arī klausoties vakardienas Zelenska presas konference, es secināju, ka mums iespējams, ka vajadzētu vispār saviem klausītēm varbūt tādu priekšstatu radīt, ko vispār nozīmē kaut ko pabeigt tādā militārā jomā, jo tas nav tā vienkārši, kā Trumps domā apsēdās parakstī, viss ir kārtībā.
Skatieties uz Koreju, vai ne, mēs par nozīmē pabeigt.
Pabeigt, vai ne, mēs par to noteikti kaut kad vēl runāsim Latvijas Radio ētrā. Kolēģi, žurnālisti, Edvards Liniņš, Rikards Plūma, paldies jums.
Paldies.
Atnācāt. Mēs rīt runāsim, protams, atkal krustpunktā kā parasti par aktuālām lietām, un šoreiz nākamajā raidījumā būs runa par civilo aizsardzību. Tepat Latvijā valsts prezidents ir sacījis, ka mums tie aizsardzības gatavības plāni tie pārāk lēni, tā situācija ir jāmaina. Kas tad notiek? Vai ne? Kāpēc mums tā iet, īpaši redzot, ka tā draudēna arī pašiem sāk kļūt arvien lielāk, kā mēs reaģējam, kāpēc tā. Kolēģi Māra Jānsondīte meklēs atbildes uz jautājumiem. Šodien raidījums izskan procentu Evi Junām studijā Aidis Tomsons.
Fakti un viedokļi. Krustpunktā.